Hey, I'm Heather, a chaos coordinator and mom of three young kids. Chaos and cookies is literally my life, with never-ending dishes, laundry, you name it. Being a mom is a blessing, but it also comes with hard days too. Together, we can find the humor and real solutions to lighten your load and clean up the crumbs. You're listening to the Chaos and Cookies Podcast.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Chaos and Cookies Podcast. Today we have Anthony Rostain. He's an MD and MA. He's the co-author of You're Not Done Yet, Parenting Young Adults in an Age of Uncertainty, alongside B. Janet Hipps, who's an MFT, PhD. The book is an optimistic guide for parents with adult children who need help launching an independent life. In the book, they offer tips and insights on navigating the new normal of parent-child relationships. Tony is a nationally recognized child and adolescent psychiatric expert. He's the chair in chief of psychiatry and behavioral health at Cooper University Healthcare and professor of psychiatry and pediatrics at Cooper University Medical School of Rowan University. He's a co-author of The Stressed Years of Their Lives with B. Janet Hipps and has co-authored two other books on adults with ADHD. Please welcome Anthony Rostain to the podcast. Hi, Tony. Welcome to the podcast. I'm so happy to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
I'm very excited about speaking about this. Hopefully we don't go too long because there's lots and lots of things that we could go and talk about. But we're talking mainly about You're Not Done Yet, Parenting Young Adults in an Age of Uncertainty. That's a new book that came out. And before we jump in, I like to ask all of my guests icebreaker question. And that is, what is your favorite cookie and or cookie memory?
I love oatmeal raisin cookies, and I like to make them and myself. But I also had friends who know that I love it. So lately I've been tasting some with different flavorings, you know, almond flavorings and, ground up hazelnuts and stuff. That's really my favorite. My favorite dessert actually is a cookie. And that one happens to be at the top of my list.
Really? That's a very popular choice actually among my guests. So
great.
I had one a couple of days ago who said that he didn't like cookies at all. It was kind of a new one. I was are you human? Like,
are they a cupcake person?
That's what I said. He's an ice cream person.
Ice cream. Okay. Person. Yeah.
But you know, I love ice cream. So I feel like, you know, no, you're never too young for that. So, just like your book, when we're talking about parenting young adults. So I looked at some of the things and I flipped through it. And so are you seeing more of a trend of kids living at home? And there's a lot of stigmas around that. Is that right?
That's right. The reason we wrote this book was that we were seeing in our own practices, parents coming in extremely upset and thinking they had done something wrong, and kids feeling very resentful that they were being judged for pretty much coming back home after college or after, you know, serving in the military or going wherever they went, coming back and feeling like there was something wrong with that. And it turns out that actually up through till the early part of the 20th century, almost all families had multi-generations living together. And even after people, you know, left home and would oftentimes move back in, it wasn't a big deal. Okay. Then after World War II, you know, the view at the time was that you had to grow up and leave home, have a career, have a job, get married, get a house, have a kid, right? That's the quote, adulting milestones. Now, I would say those are still people's goals by and large, but the time frame for reaching it has been delayed. So yes, delayed adulthood is the new normal. It takes a lot longer than people expected to go through all those stages. And we just want parents and kids to understand that this is nothing to be ashamed of. You're in good company. Like more than half, this is the first time in 100 years where more than half of people in this age group are living with their families of origin. Okay. And that means that It's not abnormal. It's like
Right.
it's part of what we see as the current American living experience. The thing that we were also concerned about was that parents didn't have a playbook for how to be the parents, right? Because they were feeling like people were judging them, like you shouldn't have your kid at home. And they weren't sure what to do with that young person. Like, how much do you expect them to do or not do around the house? How much privacy do they have, et cetera, et cetera. So all of a sudden people are negotiating relationships. How do they, and so the book is all about how to make the most of that relationship you have with the person who's living with you again. And how do you make time for yourself, self-care, right? Because you are not, even though you're their parent, they're an adult now. How do you figure out the boundaries? And then also what happens if you get into conflicts with that young person? So a lot of the early part of the book is helping people reflect deeply. Like the questions we ask is, what was it like for you when you were leaving home? Did you ever have to go back home? What is it? What do you imagine it's like for your young person to be back home? And if it's similar or different, how? And then most of all, what's really, you know, what's good about it, not just what's wrong with it, right? To balance that, because once you start saying, like, why are you here? There's an implication that there's a problem.
Sure.
And we want to redo that and say, oh, no, there's no problem. And by the way, a lot of families in communities in the United States have always been this way. Okay. Extended families. So we're really talking about the groups of people who had a different expectation and how do we live with that? Right. At the same time, I want to mention that at the same time, it's not always a fun thing, right? The pandemic.
Oh,
it's horrible.
And ruthless.
No, and we're still living with the aftermath. It was a very tough time. And so there was a lot of disappointment. Young people often feel ripped off. They feel like, hey, I went to college and now I can't get a decent job. They feel like there isn't, you know, where should I go? How can I be in the world when it's, you know, not friendly to me? So the disappointment that young people feel and the disappointment that adults, the parents feel, is something we want people to acknowledge before you can do something about it. First, start off by saying, okay, what's hurting? Where are the pain points? What can we do to fix things? How do we begin to, you know, spend quality time, et cetera? And we do have a whole set of, like, challenge your own assumptions kinds of questions, because, you know, wellness begins with taking seriously that it's you know, it just doesn't happen automatically. You have to really work and practice at taking care of yourself and the people around you.
Right. Because there's people that, like, for instance, my experience, I grew up in Texas. I went to school in Florida. I went to go play soccer. I moved out when I was 18. And basically just my parents got me set up out there, like, moved me in. And then it was like, boop, on your own, right?
On your own, yeah.
Right. And then came home for the holidays. And it was like, at the beginning years, because I was still, like, under 21, and it wasn't really, like, you were still under, you know, 20, right? You kind of just abided by the rules. It was still kind of fresh living kind of here and there. But as you got older, when I would come home, it, like, maybe for summer, for a longer, like, you know, for a few more months, it was trying to find the balance of living in my parents' home, respecting their rules, but at the same time, I've been living on my own and kind of don't want to, like, be nailed down. You try to be respectful to tell them where you're going to be and maybe be home at a decent hour because it's respectful of their home and there's other people there. But it's a very tricky balance.
It is a tricky balance.
Especially if you're coming back into it. Because, like, after I graduated, I stayed there. I got married, and then we got moved back to Texas. So now I'm just far enough away, but they're involved, but had, you know, kind of established my own. My sister, same situation, but stayed in state. So stayed closer, came home more often. So they didn't see me as much, but more for her. So it was more of a different type of dynamic. And it's interesting. And then nowadays, I don't think I could ever move back in with my parents. I see the world, but I don't know if I'll put personally.
Right. You're past it. You've already got kids. You've got a whole life. You've got a career. It's not really required. Although, interestingly, when they reach a certain age and they can't take care of themselves.
Oh, we've gone that down. We've talked about that.
Then they might be moving in with you, right? I mean, that's the question, right? I mean, so the point is that life isn't just one thing. You start off living together, then you separate, but you're still connected. Then you come back together for how long? And then you separate again, and then maybe come back again when the parents are older. So, see, this is where Dr. Hibbs and I, B and I, were really clear that there are no shoulds. There is no, you know, one size fits all. You do have to know your values. You do have to know your limits. You do have to know, as a parent, what your expectations are. And you do have to speak up when you think there's a problem, but not do it in a way that you did when they were younger. Like when kids are younger, parents can say, well, it's time to go to bed now, or I need, you know, you need to do your homework, etc. Can't do that when your people are in their 20s. Like you said, when you got home, you didn't want your parents bossing around anymore.
Right. So, but it's also their house, their rules. You kind of respect
that. Yeah. So that's the thing. You see, this is a classic conflict situation. You're living in my house. You have to follow my rules, right? Here's a classic one. The young person wants to smoke weed. The parents don't approve. What happens? How do you resolve that conflict? And I'm not saying there's one way to resolve it, but that's the kind of situation where we think being able to talk it through and then set up what's acceptable to everybody. It's like, what can everyone live with?
Because here in Austin, they'd be like, jump in and do it with them.
Exactly.
So be like, nah.
Exactly.
Because they're from the north. They're very traditional.
right. But you know, that's where negotiation is the skill you're talking about.
Yeah.
It's how do you negotiate those expectations to be more realistic. And I think the worst thing that's happened to young people is that they are growing up with more anxiety and more depression because they feel like the world isn't the way they expected it to be. You know, they were promised a certain set of, you know, conditions and you know, easy to go here, there, everything's going to be fine. It turns out, no, you know, life is not a straight line. It's a curvy line. And it's not a smooth road, it's a bumpy road. So what do you do when you run into, like, you know, you have a breakdown on the highway? Like, what do you do?
Right. There's no life skill anymore. Like, and is that maybe something that's happened with technology and access? Is that exactly?
So that's it, Heather. You nailed it. In the past, you'd have to figure it out yourself.
Map, like an actual paper map.
Yeah, like a map. Now it's like, oh, the GPS tells me where to go, here, there, and everywhere. And that kind of, yes, it helps. Believe me, when we're trying to go somewhere we don't know.
Oh, yeah.
What if there was a big electromagnetic pulse and we didn't have our internet and our GPS? Then what would we do? You see, the advantage, like I think of the analogy is sailors have to learn to navigate through the stars. Right. Even though they don't need that, they've got the satellites telling them, you have to learn how to navigate through the stars. Why? Because in case you're out there without all this technology, how are you going to manage? And right. I'd say the same thing for a host of other things that we rely on nowadays. Young people do want to feel a sense of competence, achievement, and mastery. So one of the things we talk about is how do we get young people who are having trouble knowing what they want to do? How do we encourage them to try things out, even if they're not that good at them? Because if you only do what's safe, you may not end up finding what you really like. So there's a whole chapter and what you're good at. So there's a whole chapter on finding meaningful work, okay? Which we think is critical to the young adult's path in this stage of life. And so it's not just what you like or are interested in. It's also, what are you good at? Like, what are your aptitudes? Where is your strength? And so if you can link what you like and what you're good at to a job, you're more likely to succeed. But, you know, a lot of people pick majors because they like this or that subject, or they're going to go in this and that direction. But what if they're not good at that? Then
Oh,
they're
right.
really, right?
Right.
So we talk a lot about the need for young people to try things out, see how they fit. And then if it fits, great. And if not, why didn't it fit? And it may be that they're not picking a field that they're good at. They're trying to do something that isn't easy and will never be easy for them, especially in a world of, what's that?
Or someone's set expectations on them to do, and it's
correct,
just
correct. That's exactly right. Somebody always wanted them to go to law school, and then they find out they hate it. You know, what do you do?
Right, especially first year, it's terrible for law school. But I think, and like for you said, the art of lost things. I always had a paper. Like I'm in that weird state. I was born in the 80s, so I had like not the cell phone, the internet. I've got little kids that have access to the internet, which I don't prefer. And I'm just thinking and I sound like an old person when I'm like, back in the day, like we had maps and,
yeah.
You know, we didn't have like, we had to balance a checkbook. No one probably even knows how to balance a checkbook or even writing checks anymore. So, but you never know, like you said, like an EMP just, or like just when Facebook went down, no one knew what to do. It's like, read a book. Yeah. You know?
Well, here's the other thing that people discovered. And again, we play with this idea in the book, is that when you take young people or anybody away from the cell phone culture for a while, like either there was one NBC story I'll never forget that showed a group of high school kids, they all stopped their phones, right? They turned off their phones. They just stopped for 2 weeks. And they had an incredible, after they got over the withdrawal, like, oh, what am I going to do? I can't go to
third
things.
Arm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Suddenly they were like spending more time talking to each other directly, and they were reading more, and they were doing things like at the gym and all this stuff. So at the end, they asked them like, well, what did you learn? They go, well, we learned that you can actually be happy without these devices. And of course, then they said, so are you going to stay on this? You know, no, I'm going back. So
because the social interaction, the social skills, like you go out to dinner and you see people looking at phones, and it's like I tell, like I make it a point to put mine down, because my kids will now say like, mom, I'm talking to you, can you do that? And I'll listen. I'll be like, oh, you're right. And I put it away and I listen, try to be present.
Oh, good for your kids. They're sharp.
They do. I tell them to speak up because you have to advocate. And so, but I also recognize when they start getting, they've got access to phones at like their dad's house, but I don't allow it here, and just keeping those boundaries set because they're so young and there's so much exposure, and I want them to have social action, you know, react communication, being able to have a conversation, looking people in the eye, because those are important for having professional jobs. And I think also COVID kind of put a kaput to going into.
Oh boy. Yeah. Well, that's for sure. It slowed everybody. We have a lot of lost time there.
I call my kids COVID kids because they were in like early childhood when they had COVID. So they're like, not them, but like when COVID was happening, so they didn't get their math and reading and their like their basic elementary skills that come into elementary school. So they're seeing a really big lapse in that right now in kids about elementary school because they didn't have the tools. I can't teach them. My parents can because they're teachers and my sister's a principal. I'm the only one not in education. I'm not put up for it. I was like, I don't know how to do that or teach you to read. So I feel like there's also that is going to leak into.
Well, so what's good though is that all of the kids in their group had the same problems.
True.
Yes.
True.
Yeah, but what you're going to do, which everybody has to do, is factor it in and not expect them to be in whatever grade they are, the way that 10 years ago the kids were, because they are going to be delayed. So that's where I think
it's a problem. My mom's a reading specialist.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh my gosh, they're so behind. I go, you have to remember, like, A, it's not back when we were kids, like back when we had paper report cards and nothing was online. And like, you actually knew your teacher and the teacher knew you because you had to go in to talk to them and not do whatever. And so, and there's no email. And they see, like, my mom has a hard time with that disconnect of like, they're not going to be where the old expectations were just because of the circumstances.
Exactly. So that's the crux of the both this book and the previous book, which is that expectations should not be taken for, you know, just as this is the way it has to be. We have to ask ourselves, what are we expecting here? What do we do? How much of that, of those expectations are realistic? And how many of them, the expectations are not realistic? And how do we then modify our expectations so that we're more likely to be able to adapt to the world we're in, not the one we want to be in? Okay.
Right, but then you have to deal with also like the opinions of others and how not to.
That's the other big one.
Right.
Is not letting the opinions of other people dictate your choices. So when you were just talking about your kids, so during the pandemic, kids began to relate to each other mostly this way through the internet, which had its positives, like especially for kids who are socially anxious or a little bit socially odd or different.
At school and they didn't have to go anymore.
Yeah, they loved it. For them, they loved the pandemic. It was like, oh, great, I can stay home and go to school. Wow. Well, what happened at the end was they had to go back to school. And they experienced tremendous anxiety because it was like, oh, you know, I'm not used to it.
Yeah.
And the other thing that we noticed after the pandemic was that, especially somewhat older people, was that they felt like they weren't sure what they were supposed to be doing now. You know, like, should they just pick up where they left off, or what happened? You know, how do we help people who don't know what they're supposed to be doing? Give them a chance to figure it out, right? Don't tell them. So this age of young adulthood that we're writing about is supposed to be an age of experimenting, trying things out, seeing what works. If you don't like what you pick, try something else, as opposed to
carried on though. Like, I've noticed that, like, I mean, they call it millennials, but they'll go like job hop. So back in the day when your resume wanted longevity to get a job and they want to see you at somewhere, now it's like, I have like my mom's really good friends, which are her kids are my age and they're almost like 40. Right. And he just started another job. I'm like, didn't he just start one like a year ago? I was like, yeah, better benefits. I'm like, okay. And I guess it's just the norm now. So things have just
well,
shifted.
There's just more. I would say that there's just more variety and a different set of expectations.
Okay.
People in Gen Z don't look at their careers, and some of them look traditional. I would say there's a different groups. There are the traditionals who will look at it just like you describe. I'm going to find a job. I'm going to go to it. I'm going to stay there. But even the industry, the job market is not that predictable either in some areas. Then there's the group that are completely don't want to have anything. They just want to keep moving from job to job. And that, I would say, is they're still searching, right? And they may end up never having a single job. Then you have to ask them, so what's the purpose of your job? And if it's just to make money and they're not really particularly wedded to what they're doing, then you could almost see it as, okay, what do they really value in life? Well, it's what they do outside of work. So we can talk about that. Maybe for some people, finding a good enough job that gives them a chance to be independent enough to have things they like in life and not worry about, quote, in being overinvested in their careers. So then there's the middle group. I would call the middle group. The middle group, they want a career, but they don't want to sacrifice for that, their personal wellness. So the Gen Z group is coming now. Like, I have a lot of experience with them in medicine.
What's Gen Z? Gen Z is about what age?
They're now in their 20s and 30s. So that's, okay. You know, right up until about age, you know, 34. So right now, that group is having, that middle group is having it the following. They want to get a career. So let's say they come to medical school and residency and all. So they want that. But they're also, they want quality of life. They want to be able to go home and have a family. And to some extent, that's healthy, you know, that they just want to say, I don't want to play just on the terms that are there. I want something more. I want
work-life
to have
balance, right? Work-life balance.
So work-life balance, I think, is a good thing that's come out of this Gen Z group, because they're quite making us think, well, what's really important?
It's hard, actually. My job, my day job, they like are very like, we don't want you working outside of hours. Like, it's just like, we want you to have a good work-life balance. It's so hard for me because I dive. That's just how I am.
Yeah.
And
so this is your this is
to do
yeah
that.
Right.
Yeah. And I guess my last question too is, like, I noticed some of the like failure to launch was a part of some of the things that we've collected before we got this interview. And that's a great movie, by the way. Matthew McConaughey, Sarah
Yes.
Jessica Parker.
Yes.
Is that an
Exactly.
actual thing before the movie came out? And is that a pretty, I mean, obviously it's entertainment, but is that something that actually happens where parents will come and have these issues and work through?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I love humor. I love the way that, you know, these issues get described in a humorous way so that, you know, you can almost laugh at yourself and say, yeah, you know, that's me, right? That's me. So, you know, I don't like to use the word failure to launch, even though it's part of the culture, just like I don't like the term helicopter parents.
Yeah,
So,
no.
instead of failure to launch, I would say something like trying to pick a flight, still not sure where they want to fly to. You know, they're not really failing. They're just not ready to, they're not ready to launch. That's a different, so not ready is different than failing. And the other is to think about helicopter parenting. What I like to say is, it's intensive parenting. You're really intensely interested in who your child is. And for some kids who are very, who are special in some way, and all of them that lived through the pandemic, now I would call the pandemic kids special because they had something happen to them that we can't quite relate to, then you are going to watch them more closely. You are going to be a little more intensively interested in how they're seeing things. And that doesn't have to be a bad thing.
Right.
As long as you respect them as separate from you. If you see them as just extensions of you or that you can't give them space, I would say that's not healthy. But intensive parenting is, again, the norm. Parents invest a lot in their kids. It's important to not kind of overjudge them or yourself if things don't go the way you expected. But
right, because
some
everyone
of this,
has their own experiences. You can't press upon like how you did it in your life. They have the same experience. You want to give advice, but at the same time, you're like, but that's your experience. I don't want
that's
you to.
Correct. That's correct. So I'd say that from the standpoint, I think from what you say is that parents should not be judged for being, quote, intensive in their parenting. What they need is help, not judgment, but help when they're stuck. And that's what we were trying to say is when you're stuck, there's a way to get unstuck. There's a
Yeah,
way
you're
to,
not alone.
yeah, there's a way to look at yourself, and there's a way to look at, you know, what's going on with your young person. And most of all is to see it in the bigger context.
Right.
Like you can't, you know, you can't go back in time. We can't put the genie back in the bottle of social media. So how do you experience and live with social media in a healthy way? How do you learn to turn it off? How do you learn to balance the time you spend online with what you need to do to have a healthy brain? Making sure that you sleep, making sure that you exercise, making sure that you find ways to really relax, you know, mindfulness. Those all take effort and practice. And the one thing I worry about in our world, not just for the young people, but for us as well, is that we're allowing the ease of using the internet and the social media and the phone is sort of
instant gratification.
Yeah, exactly. We're using it for instant gratification, and it's sort of like a dopamine hit. We're always kind of getting that little, oh, that's stimulating me. But the problem with that is you put down the phone, what do you do with yourself?
Mm-hmm.
You experience FOMO, like I'm going to miss out, or you're experiencing boredom. And I think both of those things should be discussed by parents and young people. And even with your kids, you know, whenever they're ready to have, like you're saying, you're limiting the access. I think that we all need to limit access so that it's, you know, as I like to say to my patients, Either you master the technology or the technology will master you. Which Absolutely. One is it going to be?
Know enough also, I feel like, to get to be dangerous. Like, I want to learn, like, there's games out there. I have no interest in playing them, but I try to get on and learn them and navigate it because I need to be able to understand what they're doing. So then I can understand if there's a problem or not. Like Right now it's discussing speaking to strangers online. That's not something I have to deal with here because I don't allow it. But when they come home from other places, it's okay. How are we going to navigate that? I never had to go really through that. We had like the dial up, like, you know, talk to your friends. So it's ever evolving. My 6 year is always like, I'm bored. I'm like, you have 16 things going on. How are you bored? I'm overstimulated. So it's just, it's a very different world. And it'll
look again, boredom is a statement that says, I'm not getting something I'm looking for.
Okay.
I'm not engaged in whatever is going on. It could be they're bored because they have too many things, too many distractions, and they're not focused enough on one thing. And that, the other thing is that they may be bored is that they're not experiencing their activities as theirs. It's sort of coming from, so I always like to talk about ownership. Like, are you owning your own life right now? Are you sitting in your life owning it, or do you feel like it belongs to someone else and you're just playing it out?
Right.
So boredom, you know, boredom is interesting. We have to learn how to live with boredom, because there are times when you have to do things that are boring, right? Cleaning the dishes, you know, or whatever. Like, so it's like, how do you make it interesting? You know, and the way I got into this really during the pandemic was we all had to wash our hands, and washing your hands can be a big pain. We had to wash and wash and wash. So I made it like, I said I started to make it do happen for me was, hey, I'm going to get into every minute of washing my hands. I'm going to feel my thumb. I'm going to feel my, and it became a sensory experience. So what I tell people when they're feeling bored is I say, okay, why don't you start by breathing and slow down your mind and stop labeling it? Because saying you're bored already is a label. And instead just say, I'm not sure what to focus on. When you don't know what to focus on, you feel bored or you feel anxious, one or the other. So instead, let's get into the moment. Let's practice breathing. Let's practice stretching. Let's focus on something. Look at the sky. The best cure I have for people who are bored is I say, step outside and look at the clouds.
Yeah.
You cannot be bored when you start to look at the world around you. It's just a function of being disconnected from the world and being too electronified. You know?
Right. Just like it's something to say when you have a crying baby, I always take them outside and it just is like, oh, endorphins from the sun, something of a change, fresh air. So there's a lot to be said for
exactly.
that. Right?
Exactly. Exactly. And I just think the last thing I was going to say is I just think that parenting young adults is different from moms and dads. Mm-hmm. And I think moms have it much more hard, much more difficult for moms, because they feel so much more responsible.
Oh, I love that. Will you say that again for anybody that's listening? Because it's like,
mom. No, I think that, look, it's not that it's easy for dads, but it's especially hard for moms, because moms feel constantly worrying, constantly like, oh my God, what did I do wrong? And I just think that fathers may be worried, but they don't take it as personally as moms do. So moms, or if not moms, just women, it could also be the maternal parent, right? Because sometimes
we're more emotional. It's okay. You can say it. It's not.
Yeah,
it's not
but
offensive.
It's so I think that the emotional pain that parents experience when their kid is not doing well, when they're floundering, when they're undecided, when they're uncommitted, when they're not feeling the power and the joy of living, that's important to say, okay, that's a message. But instead of getting guilt-ridden or over-anxious, it's just to acknowledge, okay, what's going on here? And can I figure out where I am? Is that really what's happening, or is it just me? If it is really happening, how do I begin to talk to my young person, my young adult, in a way that's adult to adult? Because they're adults, you know? Now, that's not true. Okay, that's not true of the young ones, like who are The early edge of Gen Z is like 13-year-olds now, 14. But the ones that are moving into the 20s, because if you think about it as a 15-year gen, the older Gen Zs, they're still not fully grown up either, but they need to be talked to like adults. Hey, right. And that way you can really get to understand them better instead of trying to fix the problem. That's no longer the case. It's about, I see you're having a problem. Is there anything you want to discuss about it? And is there any way that I can help you?
And with your experience, because you've been doing this quite a while, the evolution of these generations, it's like probably been really fun for you to keep things interesting.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. No. I am still in the learning mode. I'm still in an open mindset. I'm still feeling like, well, what's happening next? Like it's amazing. It is. It's amazing time. And again, a lot of opportunity, but also a lot of things that are scary. And we do have to appreciate that whatever we think is going on, there's always more going on than we realize.
Oh, so of course.
I always feel very humble. That's
oh, absolutely. And when you said like people don't know how to do it or why or what, having resources is huge. And so this book that you've given the world is, I mean, I'm all about resources and handbooks. Like I created a playbook for my home and to have all like
nice
find everything like
yeah yeah yeah
system
you're
where
getting
you
organized
can, so if you take me out of it, someone could still come in, open a page and know, and things can function. Mom doesn't have to worry and deal with what she needs to, trying to at least control what we can. And so with this is a nice A, not feeling like you're alone, B, a nice resource that you can take from and get ideas or approach maybe a professional like you and have a conversation, and knowing that there is like you're not just unique in that situation, right?
Yep, absolutely. It's important to feel like there's help out there, and that's our message: is you're not alone. There's help out there, and I love the fact that you have a show like this where people can learn and share and apply what we're learning from science and from clinical experiences. We're trying to make it accessible to everybody so that everybody's better prepared. The one other thing I'll say is I think we're changing the paradigm of clinical care, because in the past, clinicians would only look at a young adult and say, oh, I can't work with your parents. I can only work with you. We're advocating for a different model of care. We think that families need to be involved, that it's, yes, the young person needs to have their space and their place to sort out their issues, but we need the family there because young people need their family. We all need our families, but especially when the young person is struggling, it's really important that the family be consulted and, if anything, invited, if possible, invited in to discuss what's going on and try to come up with solutions. And the book is filled with examples from our work where we had
awesome.
To bring everybody in.
Yeah, it's excellent. I was reading through it. And I mean, it's nice to see different types of situations. When my kids were in therapy, we would have parent sessions and they would see more, or they would see growth because maybe there's an aha because there's a different trend, like just, or when the parent comes, a different parent, you'll see a shift. So it's just very interesting and keeping open-minded and to change it up a little bit.
Yeah.
To keep things to see really what the root is. So I really do appreciate you, Tony, being here and sharing the book.
Thank
and
you so much.
And you are a wealth of knowledge. And where can we find this book and you and all of your...
Well, I'm... So let's see. I'm Anthony Rostain on LinkedIn. I'm also Macmillan.com. If you just go to Macmillan's website and put in the name of the book, you're not done yet. You'll be able to see, and it's all the different places you can buy it. It's many, many different sites.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for being here. And the book is called You're Not Done Yet, Parenting Young Adults in an Age of Uncertainty. There's also a predecessor of the book. Name that for us, Tony, in case the younger...
The best years of their lives.
Awesome. And so there's two books that Tony has, and I really encourage you to go and check those out. Thank you so much for being here. And please,
well, thanks so much, Heather. Really
Absolutely.
Appreciate you hosting me.
Absolutely.
And good luck with the good luck, good luck in the future with Chaos and Cookies. It's a great Sounds like a great, great podcast you got going.
And thank you for listening to another episode of the Chaos and Cookies podcast. Everything will be in the show notes, all the links. This is a very great book. It's an easy read. And I really encourage you to go check it out. And we'll catch you on the next one.
Thank you for listening to the Chaos and Cookies podcast. If you want more goodies and friends to share them with, follow the crumbs to the Facebook group or visit the Chaos and Cookies website to grab my sweet secrets on how to calm your cookies. Don't forget to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. See y'all next week for another episode of Chaos and Cookies.